Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Stop Telling Me to Relax. My name is Veronica. I am the host of the show. I am here today with a single mom of one who lives in Texas. She works in STEM and she has a financial coaching business for women who also work in STEM and do similar work as she does.
Yeah. Hi, Veronica. Thank you for having me on. Yes, I'm Sandra Park. I'm located here in Texas, was born and raised here. I'm a single mom of one son. He's 19 years old. And for work, I'm an engineer in the daytime. And then I'm also a financial coach and business owner in the evening.
Nice, nice. Well, thank you so much for reaching out to me and wanting to you know, just being interested in the podcast and wanting to come on and be a guest. Social media and Facebook's pretty cool how we can interact and meet people from all over the world, really. So it's an honor for me. And people are like, what's your podcast? Like, and they want to chat. I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. So thank you. I appreciate it. All right. So let's get started. Let's see. The first question, I don't know if you just want to tell us a little bit more about yourself, your life, what your life looks like now, your work, your passions, and anything, you know, about yourself.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I've been an engineer for a little over 20 years. Currently, I have a work from home job. I've been working from home in this job and the previous job I've had. So that's been nice experiencing remote and working online. It definitely has its pros and cons. It's nice to work at home, sometimes not so nice. And then I've also been building a financial coaching business on the side. I've done that since 2021. And okay. I've been a financial coach. I was a financial advisor for a while. Now I'm back to doing financial coaching. That's helping people with more the money management side rather than helping people manage their money. It's helping people understand their spending, reduce debt, building up savings, and getting to the point where they can actually build wealth and invest. So that's, you know, kind of my income and business pursuits. And then just like personally, yeah, I have my son and he still lives with me for now. Uh-huh. He's in community college and just like doing normal things, you know, hiking, reading, podcast, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have your own podcast, too, kind of tied with your business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah. I consume a lot of podcasts also.
Okay.
Any person who probably has a podcast, I love listening to podcasts. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love reading, of course, watching things on YouTube, traveling, learning, lots of different things, cooking.
Yeah. Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you. So it's funny that you not funny, but like you work from home and my idea of an engineer. And like I said, the first time we chatted, I was like, what's STEM? Like, I really am not privy to what STEM is. But I always thought, I know what science and I know what all that they are. But like just the grouping of whatever, I wasn't quite clear on what it was. But I always thought engineers were like in the field, like, I don't know, drawing and like out in the field. And then and you said you work at home. I'm like, well, how does that work? Like, you know,
yeah.
What kind of projects like do you work on?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Because I mean, definitely there's stereotypes and perceptions of what engineers and tech people do. And mm-hmm. there are definitely people out in the field with hard hats. I've never been one of those people.
Okay.
I always tell people I'm more probably like if you imagine like The Office, those type of people. Not saying I do different type of work, but uh-huh. I work in more of a similar environment in mm-hmm. office cubicles and a boss and in politics sometimes. But uh-huh. Now, my current job, I work on a program for global communication satellites. So just through like you're talking about social media, through the power of the internet and having a computer, I work with a team in Canada.
Oh, okay.
And yeah. So this job, part of the team is actually on site, but my previous role, nobody was on site. Everyone was virtual mm-hmm. and one was online. So it just depends on the type of work that you can do. If it could be done through a computer, sure, you could work from home. But yeah, there's other people working more in the field or oil field or construction people or those type of people. And yeah, I've never worked those type of jobs. So
yeah. Okay. Thank you for explaining that. So we just kind of got into the second question, but why did you choose to go into engineering, or what interested you about choosing a career in STEM, and what is it like? It's my understanding it's a heavily male field of work. So what is it like being a female in a heavily male dominated space? And I guess why did you choose to work in STEM?
Yeah, those are all great questions. I guess like a lot of people, I knew I was pretty good at math and science, even at a young age. I
that
loved
because I am not like people that are good at math, I feel like are just like touched by the Lord. Like I don't know. I'm so jealous.
Okay. And you know, it's funny because engineering school is pretty hard, and it does weed people that are, I wouldn't say that you can't do it if you're not good at it, but if you're not willing to get better at it, then that's
it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Especially if you already have an aptitude towards it, then it's a bit easier.
Right.
I'm certainly no math genius, but better than average kind of, you know, abilities in math and science. I love the problem solving aspect of it. And I just, when I was researching the different majors and things I could go into, it just seemed the most interesting to me. I was originally going to do chemical engineering, but the school I ended up going to didn't actually even offer chemical engineering. So I picked electrical engineering. But yeah, you know, it's funny. I didn't really even research the salaries going into it. I didn't know if it was male dominated. No, I had no perception or idea of that. Because I think right now, well, they probably always do it. They kind of market it as a really high paying field.
They do, yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. It's funny they market that to like kids that have no perception of what a dollar is.
Yeah. I can remember being in college, and this was like early, like 2005, 2006. You know, they're like starting pay for engineers, architects, you know, or anything in STEM, you know, $175, which is, and in like 2006, that was a lot of money. You know what I mean? Yeah, I can definitely remember just the, you know, that idea of being put out there that the salaries pay well. But it sounds like it's well deserved. I mean, with the level, the intensity level of what I can imagine, a bachelor's program is, or post grad. Like I can imagine it's a lot of work.
Yeah, and working isn't always a piece of cake either. So it's kind of high stress sometimes. But I also love it because you're solving really, really tough problems. And there's not that many women in the field. When I say field, I mean the whole industry.
Right, yeah.
The numbers are pretty skewed towards men. It's more male dominated. I'm sure some of it's, you know, they also talk about the aptitude for mathematics, right? That you have a certain aptitude for it. Uh-huh. But it's interesting. It's trying to change. You know, I do see it increasing for the better, the numbers, but, you know, change is slow, right?
Yeah, it is slow. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. I have a question. And if you don't want to answer it, it's totally fine. Did you feel, It's my understanding that in a lot of Asian cultures, the families really push them to do some sort of job in STEM. And, you know, there's a big focus, more so than in other cultures, on like getting an education and in one of those fields, and then and making like sure you're going to make good money. Did you feel that pressure from your family to do that? Or
I mean, definitely to get an education and go to college. Uh-huh. But yeah, they really weren't that pushy about exactly what to study.
Okay, all right.
So I think definitely maybe other families can be, or, you know, if I said I was going to study, I don't know, marketing or art or something like that. No, they weren't super picky about exactly what I studied or what field or all that. Yeah.
Okay. Then maybe that's a stereotype I need to course correct my mind on then.
Well, like you said, I think the extreme is you have a kid that wants to do art history, right?
Right, yeah.
And it's like, well, what are you going to do with that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not making fun of the people who did art history, but just trying to make sure you have some type of skill set that's semi-marketable in the field, right?
Right, yeah. Job stability. Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. So you said you are a single mother of one child who is now an adult, and he's 19, almost out of his teens. I guess if we just want to go there, like what led you to raise him as a single parent? Yeah. What's that story?
Oh, okay.
That's a hard question to ask. I don't know why. It's like, what happened?
uh, I feel like it's probably the I wouldn't say trite, but like we grew apart type of thing.
Okay.
I met young, mm-hmm. and it was just pretty rocky and all that. And during the time I was pregnant, we were arguing a lot, and he was always threatening to leave. And I think it was 3 months after he was born, we just had this blowout argument, ironically over money, because he gave my sister some money without telling me. And money was a huge issue between the two of us because he wasn't working and I took leave from work, maternity leave from work. So I was struggling for money also. And we didn't really have our finances together at that time. And I caught him lying about that. And that's when he just blew up and he left. And that's kind of how it ended.
What was his explanation for not telling you? He just kind of gave you the run around.
It wasn't like a discussion. Of course, he denied it. Yeah. It was just a really, really bad argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So were you guys married or were you just together for You were married. Okay. Okay. So after he chose to leave after that argument, your son was 3 months old. What was going through your head like when he left? It was final, you know, the relationship's over.
I almost felt better about him leaving because it was so off and on and so rocky and unstable months leading up to it. It was more final where I could like actually decide and go forward with my life.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, just having a 3-month-old, you're just so busy.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of grateful for, I was super, super busy with being a new mom that I really couldn't like just sit there and like cry all day and dwell on it, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, well, this is what it is. And I have to start figuring out my life from this point. So
mm-hmm.
It was probably the best thing because I don't think I would have left because I was just such a determined person.
Yeah.
Him leaving just, you know, made it real that we couldn't be together.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking back, like after everything was over, were there red flags that you just kind of totally overlooked?
Oh, sure.
About the relationship? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, on social media, there's so much red flag, green flag crap out there.
Yeah. I know. I feel like we're hyper vigilant about it now because it's always in our face.
That's the problem. We're misusing the term. We're getting hyper vigilant and we're making like a checklist. And I also think there's context with a lot of things.
Mm hmm.
I mean, of course, there are certain red flags out there, but it's some of the other things like, was this a red flag? And it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, you see things on social media and then like you think about it and then you ask your friends and people have different opinions. Like, well, you know, like it's so confusing.
Oh, that's
everything
right.
Is so convoluted.
That's right. And it puts stuff into your head, right?
Yeah,
and you're like,
it does.
Is there something
it does. Yeah. It's just, well, so, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just so many, I mean, if you call them red flags, I mean, mm-hmm. just signs that probably wasn't going to work, you know, just getting together young, you know, not having good conflict resolution skills.
Yeah.
That keep him running away whenever there was any type of conflict or anything to get discussed, anything that was tough. You know, having a child is also a really rough time for couples adjusting. It's not the easiest time. You know, you still have hormones, just trying to figure things out. Yeah, just so many things. I think there's a lot of ways we're not very compatible people.
Yeah.
I didn't know that when I was younger.
So yeah.
He doesn't really have always the best work ethic and ambition. And now looking at that long term, that wouldn't have worked, right?
Yeah,
it wouldn't have. Younger, you probably don't even realize.
Right.
We're just like fundamentally like really different people. So, yeah.
Yeah. You weren't meant to be. So speaking of like you were mentioning like work ethic and all of that, were you finished with school and are starting to establish your career once you became a mother and once you were a single mom, or did you still have those goals to reach?
So I was 26 when I had my son.
Oh, okay. So you were done.
I finished college. I was in my career, but I was still really pretty junior and pretty young in my career.
Uh-huh.
Looking back, I think that was probably a better way to do that rather than waiting until I was much older.
Yeah.
But,
sure.
Yeah, I was still figuring things out. I wasn't super financially stable at that time or that financially secure. So there's trade-offs, right? Because I had them when I was young and that was nice. But then I wasn't the most financially stable, or I wouldn't say unstable in my career, but I didn't have like a very established career at that point
yet. Right, yeah. Yeah, being so young, you wouldn't have quite been there yet. Okay. Yeah. What was your family's reactions to, you know, getting divorced and now you're becoming a single parent? Because some families, you know, some families are like, they're, you know, what, they're cool, not cool with it, but they're just like, go with the flow, it's life. And some families are big on like marriages and staying together and staying for the kids and all of that. What was your family's reaction?
Well, I think they were pretty happy. They didn't really care. Yeah. So I think they're okay with that. Uh-huh. But yeah. It was more probably like people were like, I told you so.
Right.
That it was going to work out.
Yeah. So yeah. Awesome. Okay. What was his dad's involvement in his life growing up? Sounds like you were the primary parent and the main caretaker, but was he around? Did he help out? Was he an active parent?
No, we didn't really hear from him for maybe like over 10 years.
Wow.
I didn't hear from him for a really, really long time. And then I just didn't spend my time looking for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just way too busy.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was wasted energy and all that. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't have very many financial resources. So mm-hmm. what's the point of trying to pursue that?
Yeah.
Right. But No, we did not hear from him for quite a long time. Then he kind of pops up, he finds me on social media, and we did try to talk a tiny bit, but it just never really went anywhere. I don't think he understands that he's never really formed much of a relationship with my son. So how can you just jump in all of a sudden?
When they're like 14 and
Right. Yeah. I don't think he understood that it's a big deal and how you do it is really important. And I do feel he kind of had a chance to when he came into the picture. He just didn't really take it seriously enough.
Right.
And I'm like, well, more time is passing. You know, there's not a whole lot you can do about the past, right? It's just all you can do is what can you change about it now and going forward? But we could never really quite agree upon that either. So,
yeah, I find it very strange. I've heard this with other single moms, like, you know, the father's absent for a while, then tries to come back and they just like want to bombard in and act like nothing.
Yeah.
Happened, that they weren't gone for years and like. They don't seek any guidance on how to do it correctly. And that seems so odd to me because, like, I don't know. It's so odd to me, like, just to think, to not have any awareness of that it can be a sensitive situation and to tread, you know, to find out what would be, like, the best practices to do for the child. I don't know. It's just, it's very odd to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's just, we could never quite come to terms on that. I definitely was allowing him to try to get more involved and all that, but just, yeah, he wanted it kind of like on his terms and his way and all mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. How do you, as much as you know, or as comfortable as you feel speaking for your child, how did that affect your child while he was growing up, your son? Did he ever ask about him? Did he ever have any, like, you know, experience any issues because his father wasn't around?
I think we had that many issues because he wasn't around.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, like I said, he's never been around since even the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
And I really understood that. So, yeah, I don't feel like he had that many issues. I definitely didn't keep stuff from him. But no. Because like I said, it wasn't like a big shift. Like, he mm-hmm. was there one day. No, he's not. It's kind of like he's always been with me all the time since little. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have family support? Like, did your family live in that same area that you live in to help you with him while he was growing up and you were working and trying to do all the stuff?
My family lives in this area. Yeah, okay. I live with family. So I'll get help from them. And definitely, you know, just did all the normal things. Like, he's joined, like, sports teams and, you know, school groups and all that stuff. So, yeah. Definitely always had the support of other people.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's good. That's life-saving, at least for me. I'm like, I could not, I don't know how I can do it without my mom and like just people, helping. Being a single mom while you were raising him, did you feel any type of judgment from other people, other moms, in the same that are raising their children, maybe married moms in the same community? Or did you find any like allies that you could talk about your single mom experience with in your community?
Well, I guess because I had my son a little bit younger, I also became a parent before a lot of my
Yeah,
other
same. Yeah.
friends and peers. So I didn't always have that. I definitely had friends and peers and acquaintances becoming parents later than me. So we could definitely talk more as parents, but then their kids were like an entirely different age compared to
Yeah.
mine.
Yeah.
It's different phases of having children, right? And different stages. Where, I'm not going to get invited to like their toddler thing because my
Right.
toddler.
Yeah.
Yeah, but definitely my area, we have a lot of married people, a lot of families and all that. So yeah, you just have to find your own community. But yeah, definitely not always, the people I hang around, right? But I found it through like different online groups. There was like a good meetup group that I was part of.
Oh, okay.
I have some isolated friends that I think I can relate more to. And like I said, it's not always we'll have kids the same age because that's unfortunate that
Yeah.
it just doesn't work out, but they can still relate to being parents and all
Right.
that. And I also find as I'm getting older, now I have more friends that are becoming divorced and now they are single parents.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm experiencing that too. I was in the exact same situation. I was 24 when I had my son, so I was young, and
Oh
none
my
of my friends had, none of them really had kids at that age. I ended up just like through fate finding friends that were other like young single moms, but some of the friends that I had prior to becoming a mom, like, we were just on two different wavelengths.
Yeah,
They
just
weren't.
and you might sync back up again
Yeah,
one day.
yeah. Well, we have now just 'cause like they it's crazy to think, like, I have friends that, my son's 15, he'll be 18 in a few years, and an adult, and just, and I have friends who are just now becoming parents, at late
Yeah.
30s, early 40s, and I'm like, I've been through, like, I don't know, it's just wild to me, like, everybody's life just kind of works out differently, and either way is fine, but I'm just like, you're just starting right now, and I've been through the big, most of it, the majority of raising a child.
Yes.
So it's just crazy, just the differences. And it's funny because I have friends come to me now and say, like, how did you do this? Like, how did you, we were so young. We were like mid-20s. You were had a baby. You were doing it as a single parent. How did you do this?
You
Or,
probably don't even remember.
no, I don't. It's all a blur, and
Yeah.
all like
It's you're
went
just
by so
overly
fast.
focused. Yeah,
But they're
yeah.
shocked because they're like, we knew you were kind of struggling, but you don't know what it's like to be a parent or have a newborn, a toddler, till you're like in it. You really don't know what it's like. And they're like, we had no idea how hard this was, or like, how did you do it? And I'm like, I don't know. You just, everybody has situations that can feel a little challenging. You just get through it. But it's funny to see my friends now, they're starting to have kids, and they just are just like, I don't know how you did this when we were so young, but
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but
yeah.
it's fun to see that happen where people, they may have never been in your shoes, but now they kind of understand.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Did you feel at all having being 26 and still in your like mid-20s having a child, did you feel at all that you missed out on any like part of your young, fun 20s? Phase of life.
But not too much. I guess I've always been kind of more mature for my age. I do think definitely it forced me to grow up a little faster. But I'm not sure. I feel like I missed out. I feel like my 20s are pretty chaotic anyways.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah, if it shortcutted that, it probably wasn't the worst thing ever.
Yeah. It's funny. I kind of feel like that too. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, it would have been, like, I don't know, it would have been nice to kind of have that time, but then also, you know,
I
was thrilled to even, what it is. And I was thrilled to like be having a baby. It was an ideal situation. And, you know, I knew it was going to be challenging, but I was like, I was so excited. So it was fine for me, but I feel like you said, like you've always been on the more responsible side, but also I see, I don't want this to sound like a judgment to anybody who's listening, but I see people that are like my age now that like really do not have their shit together like at all. Like they're still struggling just to get their footing in the world. And, you know, it takes time to do all of that and kind of to get to a secure place financially or with your career or just within who you are. But like they just like partied all throughout their 20s, kept it going in their 30s, and they're still just kind of like floating out there. Like, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm kind of glad that I did have to grow up young and kind of just pull it together, so I'm not in that place when I'm reaching my 40s, you know. I don't know.
Very, very true. It's that they're just kind of untethered in the world, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
There's just nothing really guiding them. They're just kind of, you know, going around in life, kind of like letting life happen to them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just interesting. It's interesting how, you know, lives work out, I guess. Okay. Did you, looking back on like being a mom and when you're raising your son, do you have any moments that you wish you had handled differently and like while raising him?
Well, I think everyone does.
Yeah. You don't, and you don't have to go into any details if you want, but like just like any regrets or just anything that you're like, oh, I wish I had anything, spent more time reading with him, or I don't know, you know, I don't know.
Like, I always wish I had more patience at times. Mm-hmm. I definitely wish there are times maybe I prioritize myself a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can definitely let your life revolve around your kid.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe just prioritized doing things by myself a tiny bit more. 'Cause it's definitely easy when you have just one kid to kind of make them a whole social life.
Right. Yeah.
Your default person to go do everything with, but mm-hmm. you also have your own friends, you're in your own life and your own hobbies and interests and all that. So, yeah, I definitely wish I was a little less frazzled and was more patient. Of course, I wish I was better with my money back then. Most people, but I don't think it impacted him that badly, but just to have been more financially secure by the time I had a kid or when he was younger would have been nice too.
Yeah.
Because that also would have probably contributed to less stress.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Money is the biggest stressor. Mm-hmm. Single, married, whatever. It's just, I hate that the world kind of revolves around, or stability kind of resolves around it. I hate that, but you can pick up some good skills from money management. So, okay. What about dating? Did you date at all did you date at all when you were raising your son?
I did. I don't think I've had that many long, serious relationships, but I definitely did date. I remember doing a lot of it in the evenings when he was little, mm-hmm. when he was sleeping.
I would
go do like my night dates and all that. But it was interesting, you know, trying to introduce somebody and bring them home and all that. And I remember some of them going, you know, poorly, and you know, there's some guys that are great and all that. So it's interesting. It's another dynamic of dating, right? Because now you have to take someone else into consideration.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I always, during that time when like was still kind of in my younger or mid like 20s, I can remember trying to date, never really being that successful, but always having like a, like not a fear, but like, I don't know, maybe it's just people I'm attracted to, but like I feel like I would tell, like telling somebody, oh, I have a child, like was like a big thing. 'Cause like, especially at that age, like most 25, 26 year old men, they don't want to.
That's true.
I feel like a woman who has a child just isn't appealing to them, just because I've heard, I have no idea, I've never even heard a man say this. Is again, something I heard on social media, how when men are dating someone, they want to be the priority. They want that woman to see them as the priority. And obviously, if you have a child, that's not going to be the reality. So
it was always like, we are by like society and all that. If you think about it, because you know how many guys are like, my job's the number one thing in my life right now.
Yeah.
And they're pretty clear about it, or my career.
I know. Yeah. But as women, like, we'll feel so, like, I don't think I've ever said my job would be my number one priority, or even like if I do say this is my priority, with the exception of my child, even if I were to say something is my priority, I would feel like guilty about it, you know?
Oh, no. Proud of it. I actually had someone tell me one time that he was married to his job.
Wow.
Yeah. So men will take a lot of pride in admitting something else is their first priority. They even put it on their dating profiles.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. It's
weird how women won't state their needs or what's a priority, or they're so scared about, you know, making it seem like a guy isn't the first priority, and he isn't, obviously.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Even if you kid is like, maybe you're your own first priority. It would be nice.
As you should. Like, you should have other priorities outside of, you know, having a partner.
But it's just interesting how the other side, they will easily, and they will tell you, even to the point that it's on a dating profile of a stranger, right. And they're okay with, like, professing that, you know?
Yeah. This clip of this woman is, like, a TikTok going viral. I guess she was married, or is still married, stay-at-home mom, and I guess her husband told her a couple weeks ago that he wants a divorce, and she's never worked. She had a couple of kids and he worked, and all of their money was earned by him, and she's using credit cards in his name and all of this stuff. And he told her, I guess, like, I'm gonna take you off the credit cards and cut you off having access to the money in like a month. And she's like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't have a job. Yeah. I don't have any money saved in my name. And obviously there's, you know, she needs to get a lawyer and start that process, because he can't just like up and say, you know, see ya and just leave her stranded. But anyways, this content creator that I was watching, who was talking about this video, was saying how like men will always put themselves first. Like they just like. Maybe that's an extreme case of a man who's like, there's some deeper issues going on, why he would want to leave his children and their mother financially, you know, destitute is one, like, that's weird. In a way, like, in the bigger picture is like, if he feels the relationship is over, he's just going to move on and not really care about like what state you're in. Men are just like, and maybe selfish isn't the right word, but they're just like very, they have no problem prioritizing themselves. I guess that's the point of what I'm trying to say.
Stating it and
stating it. Yeah. How bold to say to your wife, this is still his wife, they have three kids, you're not going to have any access to any of our money in a month, because he wants to get his own place and he wants to, you know, be a single guy now. He doesn't want to be around the kids all the time. Like, how bold? Like, that's just wild to me. You know, I don't know. It's like, they just don't. I don't know. It's interesting. They're interesting. Men are interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of like money and financial stability and financial awareness and just information, do you want to talk a little bit about Engineer Her Path, which is your financial coaching company, and then we have a podcast associated with it, and so what, tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, I went on my own financial journey, and I really turned around my finances through learning, through courses, through certifications and all that, and I became a millionaire, a net worth millionaire in less than a decade. And I did it on one income. And yeah, so I always want to show people that it's very possible that even on one income as an employee, that you can turn around your finances. That was less than a decade of work. And I consider myself a latecomer to finances. I didn't really start to take finances very seriously until I was 35.
Okay.
So I just want to always help empower any woman, particularly women in STEM, because I'm a little more passionate about women in the STEM fields. But it's just, I feel like once you have your finances in order, you really own your own career. You're recession proof. You know, like the situation you're talking about where you're not dependent on a man anymore for money. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of situations like where someone's been married for quite a while and now they're cut off financially, and how do they take care of themselves, or how do they pay their bills if they've never had to pay a bill their whole life? And I really think the root of all that is learning more about finances, learning how to manage your finances, and just being as educated as you can about money, regardless of like relationship status or who you're with or how much you're making. I believe you can make your finances work for you. So you're not working so hard for your money. And yeah, that's where my financial coaching business was born out of. I just realized over a certain amount of time that I always wanted to be a business owner and I never knew what. And then it finally clicked that all I consumed was personal finance type content, whether it was books and podcasts and courses and all that, because I was learning it mostly just for myself.
Yeah.
She really started all working and coming together. And that's why I'm passionate about helping other people with their finances so they can get in better positions where I call it just you're creating options and creating freedom in your life. Not necessarily you're going to retire. Uh-huh. Retirement can mean anything for people. It could mean they run a podcast. It could be like they start a business one day, but it's when people financially set themselves up, they can take that, you know, pay dip, or they cannot get paid for a while, or they don't have to work for an income. They're working because they want to do something they want to do. And then, yeah, I created a podcast because I love podcasts just like you. Listened and listened and listened to thousands of hours of other people doing podcasts.
Yeah.
And take a leap for myself. That mine's focused on women in STEM or finances or the intersection of those. I love stories. So I love just featuring people that have some type of incredible, inspiring story. It could be related to finances or not. And then I'm also trying to mix in more like expert type interviews, experts. And then some of the episodes are just going to be me talking, just kind of solo episodes where I'm going to be sharing more about my life and my finances. I never knew that people could be that interested in my own life until I started doing social media.
Yeah, same here.
They are. Not in a bad way. And you don't have to be perfect either. That's what I was realizing. But there's something about people relating to when you share more about yourself.
Yes.
And people get to know you that is very, it's a way to connect with your audience, right? Rather than you're like always teaching and telling and you're interviewing other people. So yeah, it's kind of a mixture of all those things. But I love doing it.
How long have you had the podcast?
I think close to a year now. Okay. Yeah, I think it's close to a year. Yeah, yeah. So I've been doing it a while, but like I always tell people, it's like a hobby because I don't get paid anything for it.
Yeah, same. It's a hobby. It's time consuming, but it's also, and you don't get paid. So that's like one of the things that is difficult about it, because you're spending time on something and, you know, kind of not getting paid. But I've learned now, like I'm trying to see it now as like, one, I wanted, you know, to put the podcast out there for anybody who may be going through single motherhood stuff and just needs the space to hear stuff like this. But also, like, I've met so many people through doing this that in some way can make up for the lack of financial compensation in a way, you know, like, you know, I've met a few women who just through doing the podcast that I would like consider my friends now, like you too. Like, I'm like, now, you know, I'm like, you know, just meeting other women who have had a similar experience and are kind of career oriented and all of that. So that's a positive about the podcast. But yes, money would, you know.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is my theory, because, you know, so many people start podcasts and don't really do them. I think it's because they are disappointed by how long it takes for it generate any revenue. But honestly, if you're going in it to just generate revenue, it's probably a bad strategy.
Yes.
There's way more other ways that you can make money. But I just love it. So, I do that in support of my business. I also really enjoy the podcast itself too.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I have two like final questions. First one would be, what is one, if you can think of one off the top of your head, it'd have to probably be something that's very broad, but one financial tip for anyone or for a single mom who needs to kind of get her finances in order, what would be one thing that you would recommend that they start doing?
I think one of the most powerful things that anybody can do is track your spending. Because I could easily say budgeting. Honestly, people, they're probably, that's kind of hard. It sounds easy in theory, but I'm trying to make it like break it down to something even simpler. So if you just tracked your spending for 30 days and gained awareness around how much money you're actually spending. Uh-huh. I give people the analogy of, you know, you can think you're eating 1,500 calories a day, but go track your calories.
Yeah.
And you're probably not.
Yeah.
You're probably eating way over.
Right.
Yeah, like in your head, you're thinking, oh, yeah, this lunch is like 500 calories. And then, no, maybe the drink all by itself with your lunch was 500. And just the power of awareness and tracking. And another little hack, if you don't want to track, is go pull bank statements for the last 30 days and then just pull out some highlighters and start trying to categorize your spending. You know, how many times was it gas station gas? How many were grocery runs? How many? And you start getting ideas about how much you spent. And the nice thing is it's based on historical data, right? So it's like the last 30 days and you weren't trying to, you know, starve or there wasn't anything unusual happening during that time frame because you didn't know you're going to look at your finances.
Yeah.
So it just gives you like, it's just a realistic view. Like what do you spend in a month on certain aspects of your life? Yeah. Tracking it once people have some type of awareness, and not saying everyone is overspending, but I tend to think out of either you're overspending, underspending, or you're right on. And I think most people are overspending, especially if they're tracked. If you're okay with it, like it's kind of like that first time you get on the scale and you see how much you weigh. It's that it's just that awareness. So you have a starting place.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
This is where I'm at. This is reality.
Yes. Yeah. I know I bank with Chase, and I know I should start looking at it, but I never look at this part of the app. But they'll break down like every 30 days, like according to my debit card, what I spent on food, what I spent on what utilities, subscriptions. So, you know, that's a good place to start too. Like they put totals together and they show you all the transactions, but that doesn't include cash. You know, I take out cash and then I'm, you know, spending it on things. So you'd have to factor in what you spend on cash as well. But I'm sure maybe other financial institutions.
Yeah, maybe you could do. Yeah, some of them do. I will say they're not always 100% accurate because it's kind of, you can't blame them because they're guessing off the names.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
And so it's just like the Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah.
Is that a restaurant? Is that a gas station? Is that a bar?
Yeah.
You know, doing its best, but if you can categorize some of the ones that are like one-offs or weird ones, it could be really accurate and eye-opening. It's not the best because it's kind of like looking backwards, but this is like if you truly don't want to track for the next 30 days, but the more proactive way is like you track your spending for the next 30 days and you just kind of see how you're doing.
Yeah.
The only bad thing is if you look back 30 days and you had a terrible month of spending, you can kind of get really discouraged sometimes and beat yourself. The problem is it's in the past, right? There's no point in getting upset about you spent $900 on takeout and you thought you spent more like $300 or $400.
Yeah.
But to me, the best part is not beating yourself up over it. And what can I do? Like we're talking about from this point forward and on, if you want to make a change, like what can you do about it instead of, you know, getting upset about the money that's already been spent that you can do nothing about?
Yeah. December probably isn't a good month to start doing that though, because it's Christmas.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and you know, unless you're super disciplined, but there's always, you know, everybody has extra expenses in Christmas. You don't have to Christmas shop. You don't have to get anybody anything, but I'm just saying, you know, December may be a hard month to do it. January may be good to look back, or maybe in February, look back on January. I don't know. Yeah. So I have another question too. What is your opinion on Dave Ramsey? Because I've like seen things here and there about him. Some people love him. Some people think he's full of it and his programs are for simpletons. I don't know. What is your opinion on him?
Okay. Yeah. So just to give you context, I'm a huge Dave Ramsey fan. That's where I started out personal finance. I took university.
Uh-huh.
That was one of the biggest game changers, turning points. I took that class in 2016.
Okay.
This is why I think, even though people say it's such a simple plan, why I think it works so well is there's a lot of personal finance content and information out there, right? Uh-huh. Everybody knows they should invest money in their Roth IRA, pay down their credit cards, pay off their student loans. You know, they got to do this so they can buy a new car. And it's not that it's bad, but it's just you're trying to do so many different things at the same time and you never make any progress.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt. I felt like I was smart. I definitely was reading a lot of things online and kind of understanding there are a lot of things I should be doing. And I tried doing a little bit of everything and not being successful in anything. I know there's power in small actions, but like, let's say you only invest $20 a month. You're not going to see it grow to very much.
Yeah.
Right. You got to get to the point where you're investing more. The problem is when you have a student loan payment, you have a car payment, you have credit cards, you're trying to save for your first house. You see all these other competing goals and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, throw an extra $20 at the mortgage and you never get a dent in anything. You never make any progress and you feel like all my money is just going everywhere. I don't have any money for me. So clearly this stuff doesn't work. But the beauty of the Dave Ramsey plan is it's very simple steps where you focus on steps at a time. And the early steps, you only focus on like one step at a time. So it's just that laser focus on one thing, and it helps you really prioritize different goals with your money. So to me, that's why I loved it, because it's simple, it's focus, it's telling you a priority. The other thing about the Dave Ramsey stuff that I really resonate with, I know everyone doesn't agree with, is just trying to become as debt-free as possible. And the little bit of credit card debt I had, I didn't have too much. That really stressed me out.
Yeah.
And I know there are other people that are way more okay with it, but I've always been kind of averse to debt. I don't really enjoy making those extra payments. I definitely don't want interest on them. But yeah, literally, when I had debt, I felt like, I know this sounds weird, like it was harder to sleep, you know? I felt like if things fell apart, everything counts on my income, and I have all these extra payments, or, you know, I had hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt on a house, that what happened to me, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah. It's like, I feel like debt, and I have it with student loans, it's like, and I feel so hopeless about it, as I'm like, I'm never, like, how am I ever going to pay this off? It just seems like an impossible.
Yeah.
I don't know. Student loan thing is, I feel like student loan, to me, it seems, I don't know, different than credit cards, maybe not, but like, I just, I don't know. Anyways, I feel like it's a heavy.
Yeah.
A coat I wear every day. Like, it's always just weighing me down, because if you have it, I feel like if you have a lot of debt, then you can't move forward with certain things in your life. It's just, it's like disheartening. It's like, it's
tough. I think you're right. That's the perfect way to, it's like a weight on you. And then, you know, let's say something's not going well at your work. I mean, can you imagine, like, now you're worried about your job, and then you need your job so you can make those payments on those loans, right?
Yeah.
That's, to me, it's just so much more freeing to not have all that stuff. So that really resonated with me. The no credit cards, not having high interest debt. I did pay off my house a couple years ago. That felt really good.
Oh, that's nice. That's great.
Yeah, to me, his plan truly works. It's not the most fun plan, because it's not a quick and easy plan. It's not the Instapot, you're going to be a millionaire tomorrow type of plan.
Yeah. It takes several years to get there. And sacrifices. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. What is his program called? Financial University?
Financial Peace University.
Okay.
There's classes in person, online. I've taught it quite a bit myself. I'll probably teach it in the future. I've taught it over 10 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He has to teach.
Okay. Awesome. I know I came across Dave Ramsey through, do you know who, I think he's a part of like the Dave Ramsey Network, John Deloney?
Oh, I love John Deloney.
Yeah, me too. I love his show. Like, I just him on, like, during the day, you know, they're on YouTube or your podcast, whatever. And I just listen to them all day. Like, he's just, the callers, like, the diversity of the issues and things they're experiencing is awesome to, like, hear different people's, you know, what people are going through. But then the advice he gives, like, he's always like, why are you sitting around? Or, like, it's like very practical and like real and blunt, but also like very like kind of methodical too, like in terms of like, you know, what a therapist would tell somebody, like, separating from divorce is a process. Have this taken care of before you choose to leave or whatever. Like, it's just a good show. I don't know. I love his show. It's so good. That's how I found him, and then I like looked into him, and he's part of the Dave Ramsey network, and then I kind of.
Oh, that's too funny. I think most people know him the other way around. They know Dave Ramsey.
Yeah, I realized how popular like Dave Ramsey was through him. I had never really looked into like, you know, any like Getting Rid of Dead, anything like that, and you know, John Delaney. But I'll have to look into some of his stuff, Dave Ramsey's stuff. I'll have to look into it. So it's definitely something I want to work on in 2026 for sure. Okay, last question. Being that you work in STEM, you're an engineer. We mentioned that it's a more of a male dominated career field. What's one piece of advice you would give to a young post-college first job grad or just new to the world of STEM and engineering, a young woman, what's one word of advice you would give to her? It can be like financial related or not financial related. What would you?
I was just thinking about this today because dealing with someone at work. I think just to be as confident as possible, like believe in yourself. You're going to work around people that doubt you or maybe sometimes trying to undermine you or underestimate you. And just to always kind of know who you are. I know it's definitely tough in the workplace. It is. And until you have enough, I call it the reps or the experience put in, you don't feel like maybe, you know, you're smart enough or that you deserve it, but just to always kind of know your worth and be as confident as you can. No, I'm not saying be a phony, but just be competent and confident in yourself.
Excellent advice. Thank you. Okay, so I guess we can wrap up here. Do you have any closing thoughts you want to say or your, like, shout out your website or maybe your Instagram where people can get in contact with you or find out more about you know, your financial coaching and all of that?
Okay. Yeah, I'm super active on LinkedIn. I have my website, engineerherpath.com. I have my podcast called Engineer Her Path. But feel free to message me, reach out. I love hearing from people. I do free consultations if you're ever interested. But I also do a lot of free content online. So if you just want to follow or connect there, that's good too. And I always enjoy having people listen to my podcast too. So yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on and being interested in coming on. I will link all of your Instagram and your podcast. I can link it in the show notes. So anybody who's listening can find it there if you scroll down and the links will be there. So, well, thank you so much. I appreciate your time and it was wonderful chatting with you and
thank you.
All right. Thank you.